This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
He is just an obsessive goal scorer.
They have to understand I chose to stay in my country because I'm French.
And the Bernabeu blinks it back.
I haven't got a problem with soccer, to be fair.
Football.
Look at the area to
what I can guarantee to you is that they want to keep everything secret.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to House of Champions. I'm your host, James Benge. Wherever you are in the world, I hope you are looking forward to the final knockings of what has been a thrilling European season. And we're right on the cusp of the big ones, the big European final, starting with the Europa League. I am joined by Mike Lahoud and Jonathan Johnson to break it all down. Please download, follow, share, leave us a five-star review. Keep in touch. Tell your friends about House of Champions. We love bringing you the best action across Europe and beyond. And we will be going long, long, long after this season finishes. And God, Mike Lahoud, it has felt like a long one, hasn't it? But the end is in sight.
Yeah, I mean, we came off doing the World Cup coverage, went right into the festive season in English football, came out of the new year to pick up with the rest of Europe, and now we're being rewarded with finals across the continent, and it starts with the Europa League final.
JJ, I mean, you have got to be looking at this final. I mean, obviously, no, not this final. You should be so lucky. But European finals thinking, oh, Aston Villa and one of them, that's not happened since before you were born, is it?
It hasn't, but who knows what the future might hold now. Unai Emery's got us over the line. Conference League, here we come. And who knows, maybe we might even get Asensio trotting around on the Villa Park pitch next season. It's all steady. Getting pretty exciting. The season's only a couple of days done, and suddenly, Villa fans are on cloud nine with all of this speculation.
Old, expensive, not necessarily what they need. It's good to see Aston Villa are sticking to their usual plans in the transfer market. We could talk about that for days on end, but let's talk about the big one. The best competition there is or ever will be, the Europa League. I hope you're hearing the strains of the anthem in your head as we talk through this. I don't know, producer Des, maybe you could put it on at the sort of lowest level at 3 decibels under, and maybe when Mike Lahoud is soaring in his analysis, the Hankook theme tune will soar with him. We have the Europa League final, Sevilla against Roma, pure Europa League heritage, Jose Mourinho on one corner, the ultimate Europa League team. I mean, I'm firmly of the view that this competition needs to be renamed Unai Emery Presents the Sevilla Experience. That is the appropriate title for this competition, that Sevilla have won more than any other club, having not won it, I think, until the mid-2000s. Someone correct me if I'm wrong there.
If they do it, it's 7 of the last 18, I think.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
Before we go any further, I'll just give you a little bit of the team news update, and then I'm going to get the guys to talk you through how we've ended up here. But the big stuff is on the AS Roma front, two key players who back in training and looking like they might be involved again. Leonardo Spinazzola, fantastic left back. We saw him set Europe alight at Euro 2020. And of course, Paulo Dybala. They're back in training. And I think that may be the last we hear for a while. Jose Mourinho has got his squad in lockdown. We're going to hear nothing from them. He has this immaculate record in European finals that he's looking to protect and extend. I would also point out that if he does win, he will for a few days at least be ahead of Pep Guardiola in terms of European trophies won. We are going to talk about Roma. We're going to hear from Tammy Abraham about Roma as well. But first of all, Mike Lahoud, talk us through how Sevilla have got here, because three managers fighting against relegation in La Liga. If ever there was a year where they would, I mean, they didn't even start in the Europa League. If ever there was a year where they wouldn't end up in the Europa League final, it was this one. So, of course, they are in the Europa League final.
When the season started, I mean, Julen Lopetegui, who's currently the Wolves manager, was in charge, couldn't get it done. They looked a stale project. Too many old heads, a lot of experience in the Sevilla side. They've lost a lot of players over the last couple seasons since they last won this tournament. And they come into this season starting uber slow. They get knocked down to the Europa League. And what wasn't happening in their league form ends up happening through the Europa League. And you see that time and time again in different European leagues, where Europe can be the spark to give you life that you can maybe use as a trampoline, where it flips around, where now your league form is what's propelling you to get it done in Europe. This isn't going to be the sexiest Sevilla side that's outscoring teams left and right. They are a unified front, and they've really picked it up in the knockout stages. I think of players like Eric Lamela, who, James, you'll be familiar with for a certain Tottenham Hotspur side, now plying his trade in southern Spain and looking very good. Youssef El Nassiri, Moroccan hero from the World Cup, doing it in the knockout stages. I mean, they are really getting hot at the right time.
I mean, they didn't just do it in the knockout stages, did they, Mike? They did it against your beloved Manchester United.
Yeah,
I'm coming back to knock them out. I think you've been dancing around this topic.
Yeah, no. Of course I'm not going to talk about it. We gave them the game. David De Gea, the David De Gea conspiracy. Look at the teams that they've beaten along the way. I think they beat Fenerbahce, they beat United, they beat Juventus, and now they have a chance to play against AS Roma for an unprecedented title. It would be their seventh title if they win this, and just puts them in elite company with European clubs. Question for you guys, and we'll probably get to this.
Come on, James. I see what you're trying to do here. You're trying to change the topic. So I'm going to ask you again, Mike, when Manchester United were 2-0 up inside 21 minutes at Old Trafford, could you ever have imagined you'd end up losing 5-2 on aggregate in one of the most humiliating European exits Manchester United have had in the last 3 years, I guess? It's quite a lot of them.
I thought we were talking about Sevilla, not United, but now that we're going to put United in the... Okay. Well, to hit on that, absolutely not. I did not see the game going on its head. I think the game that tilted towards Sevilla's side, and we've seen it time and time again through the knockout stages, they rely on their bench. Players come off the bench and change games for them. And Erik ten Hag got it absolutely wrong. 2-0 is the most dangerous lead. And in that first leg, if you keep your players on the pitch much longer, then maybe you get out of there 2-0 and you give yourself a much healthier chance. Sevilla have been very good at home. I think that's what both teams have in their back pocket. They've been very, very good at home. They've won all their home matches in the knockout round to get to this final. And they're excellent man managers of throughout the 90 minutes, or even if it has to get to extra time.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that's really curious when you chart how both teams have made their way to the final is, you know, that both did lose sort of en route as well. You had Sevilla winning one of their games against PSV, losing the other one. They also lost against Fenerbahce as well. But it's, you know, for me, when I look at this Roma route now, switching it to the Italians, you got them starting off in the worst possible form, losing to Red Bull Salzburg. Because let's not forget, both teams started off, in the latter stages of the Europa League. They started off in the knockout round because obviously Sevilla dropped down from the Champions League. Roma only finished second in their group behind Real Betis. So they got Salzburg, then they went on to Sociedad, Feyenoord. And then in that semi-final, it was Bayer Leverkusen. So it's been, you know, quite a testing route for both of these teams on their way to the final. And I think, you know, Mourinho's time with Roma can actually sort of be viewed sort of through the prism of UEFA competition, where you've had them in the Europa Conference League, which obviously they won. And now he's looking to sort of lead them up that UEFA ladder. I mean, it's a perfect advert for the way that the UEFA competitions have been, structured with the Conference League being added in. That is how sort of the use of that ladder system was envisaged, to have a club that could potentially work their way up from the Conference League to the Europa League, to the Champions League. while not necessarily relying on their league form. So, you know, Roma very much sort of now playing, you know, with the, you know, the fate of their season over this next 90 minutes or so, because you've got Mourinho who could potentially leave Roma, because let's face it, there is a lot of speculation that this might be one of his final games. It's also come at a very bizarre time, I might add, because, you know, Roma will play this final, which is normally the final game of a season, but then they've also got to go back into Serie A action as well. I do believe that the worst case scenario for them in terms of a league finish is a conference league position. But if they win this one, obviously, you know, they'll be in the Champions League next season. So that would be a phenomenal legacy for Mourinho to leave. But, you know, I think both teams have certainly had to work hard and reach the final, arguably against the odds at certain points.
I certainly agree with you that it was against the odds. And if we look at that, and you know, you highlighted it there, JJ, this has been a hellacious path to the final for Roma. And the way in which they have navigated it is pure Mourinho. I mean, running through the round of 16, Real Sociedad, first leg, 2-0 win at home, fighting. Go to San Sebastian, draw 0-0. Slight upset. Yeah, we all know that Feyenoord, who are super motivated, obviously, by their defeat in the Conference League, they thought they got a bit of payback on Mourinho with a 1-0 win in the first leg, and he responded probably for the only time in the latter stages of this competition by sending out a team that absolutely destroyed the opposition, 4-1 winners. And then, I mean, to me, I watched the first leg in particular of the Leverkusen tie, and I'd spent a long time on this podcast and elsewhere talking up the attacking riches that Leverkusen had, and I maintain I was right in that regard. But this was pure, undiluted, magnificent Mourinho, as they just scored that goal in the second half, held the back door under lock and key, didn't really give Leverkusen much of a chance, and drove the opposition mad. I mean, Mike, I don't want to go too much into Mourinho or the game. We're going to talk about, you know, maybe the key matchups in the second half, but what do you think this run through tough teams, a higher level than the Conference League, what has it done for Mourinho's standing within the game?
I think it's elevated it that much more. There was question marks when he came into Roma. Everyone knows his pedigree, what he's done. He's gone just about everywhere and won, and I think he would have had a great chance to win at Tottenham Hotspur had he had the chance to get that final experience in England. But he's galvanized a city. He's galvanized one half of Rome to believe again. This is Roma's side that hasn't tasted success in really almost decades since, what, was it Spalletti the last time they had a successful run, Coppa Italia, and under the likes of Francesco.
And even then, that was a team that didn't win a lot of trophies. Yeah, I mean, if you're going talking Serie A, you're going all the way back to Capello at the turn of the century.
Yeah, and immediately, what he did, and I think it's why Italy suits him so well, he captures the hearts of the fans. He's a showman. And when he captures the hearts of the fans, then he captures the hearts of the players. And this season, he knew if he was going to compete at this extra level, this isn't the Conference League, this is Europa League, you have to get an extra star. And he brought in Paulo Dybala. Dybala, he's been talismanic. He hasn't even started most of the games in this knockout round through injury, through fatigue, but he believes in this plan and he's getting the most out of the Argentine playmaker when this team needs him most.
JJ, obviously, the first European final, the one thing that all these finals have in common is the presence of an Italian team, Roma in the Europa League, Fiorentina in the Conference League against West Ham, and then, of course, Inter Milan, Mike Lahoud's Inter Milan, I believe we have to refer to them as, in the Champions League final. Out of those three, which do you see taking home a trophy? And is this telling us anything about Italian football? Is it just a coincidence? Or, you know, is Serie A on the comeback trail?
I mean, I think they're all good questions. I mean, if I had to put my money on one team to come away with the title, I think it has to be Roma. I know that's quite risky given who they're up against in Sevilla and sort of that proprietary status they enjoy over the Europa League. But I really find it difficult to see Fiorentina beating West Ham or Inter beating City. I think I'd probably go for Fiorentina before I go for Inter, but you know, I don't want to risk incurring the wrath of Mike Lahoud. But no, I mean, in terms of having an Italian club in each final, obviously it's fantastic for Serie A, which you can tune into on Paramount Plus every weekend.
Good plugging.
But it's thank you, and it's I mean, I want to say that it's sort of the beginning of a comeback on the biggest stage. only time will tell if that's the correct opinion or not. But I do believe that it has done a lot of good for the Italian game. And it's something to try and build with, you know, moving forward. It now sort of gives them daylight between themselves and some of the other leagues that have started to sort of creep up a bit further behind in terms of the coefficients. And, you know, I do think that, you know, with some investment into, you know, the right players, some of those teams could be competitive moving forward as well. Whether or not we'll see again another year where you've got an Italian team in each final, I think that comes around extremely rarely. So, you know, make the most of it while it's here. But, you know, an Italian team making one or maybe two of the finals in the next couple of years, I wouldn't completely rule it out.
Interesting comment from Rocco Sage. Serie A cannot compete financially, but the quality of the football definitely returning to old glory. I agree with the second half of that. I think there might be an upturn in financial prowess for Serie A, given the money at stake. If some of these teams that are in the final win, the Premier League is the cash cow at the end of the day. You obviously have PSG, but what has really been the biggest part of the renaissance, as I've said time and time again, that we're seeing this year is the investment from foreign players and really the scouting. I mean, look at a club like Napoli. Some of the players that they recruited to come in was not on many people's radar. Kvaratskhelia. If you would have told me Kvaratskhelia would be one of the best players in Serie A this season, I would have said you're absolutely crazy. Victor Osimhen. And we're just talking about one club. But I look at Milan, players like Rafa Leal. I look at Inter as well, a bit more experienced heads. And they've done well to retain talent in this pool of teams. And if you ask me about those three finals, James, I know that I've said the craziest thing. I'm sticking by it. Obviously, Roma, I agree with you, JJ, that Roma do have the best chance. I'm going Inter still at number two, man. You guys are going to call me crazy. You're laughing.
You are crazy. Face.
I know, man. This isn't even coffee. That's why I'm drinking it. Inter at two, and I go Fiorentina three.
I don't really know how to follow that, so I'm going to let the our viewers do so instead. Rocco say, Serie A cannot compete financially, as you said there. I mean, but the quality of their football definitely returning to old glory. I would maybe question that. You know, I don't particularly enjoy watching Serie A whenever it's on Paramount Plus. I can be wrong there, but Ed, there, good comment as well. Italian clubs have been to 28 European finals. Only Spanish teams have gotten to more. But I think I probably fall down on the side of what Matt Osman's saying. One-off Italian teams won't be in the top two finals next season. Let's be clear. Always the joy of Serie A, the one thing that actually does make it incredibly invigorating to follow. Maybe even if the games aren't as high quality as the Premier League, as the best of La Liga, is that you go into any season, especially in this post-Juventus era, not really knowing who's going to win the title. I don't think you can say that for any of the other top four European leagues. Obviously, Real Madrid and Barcelona, you take your pick in La Liga, but in Serie A, there's six winners, potential winners every season, maybe at the very least. We've seen the emergence of clubs like Atalanta. I think what you have in Serie A is a depth of good teams, but maybe not that many great teams. Obviously, Napoli in another year, who knows where they might have been. I think there will always be Italian teams that are there or thereabouts. We'll have them in the quarterfinals, and sometimes the draws will break really favorably, like they did for Inter Milan in the Champions League this season. As for from my perspective, how many win? I'm with JJ here. I make Roma the favourites. I think they're probably the only one that will win. I could see Fiorentina beating West Ham, but like West Ham are on a heater of late and actually looked really good when I saw them even in defeat to Leicester on Sunday. Inter Milan have the level of chance that any football team has when they turn up to a football match. Like they could win, but I don't think so. But anyway, That's for future pods. We will be talking about the Champions League final. Don't you doubt on it. But after the break, we're going to dive a little bit more into this game, look at some key matchups and try and decide who has more European juice, Jose Mourinho or Super Sevilla. That's right after the break.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It's back. Due to popular demand, UEFA are giving you a final chance to win your limited edition UCL Elite Foot 23 kit. Winners will also receive a digital copy of the FIFA 23 video game. Time is running out, so make sure to enter now at uefa.com/elite. And remember, for the YouTube audience, right up there in that top right-hand corner, you can just click on the QR code or take a photo or however those QR codes work and get yourself straight to the competition to enter. Right, Jose Mourinho, 20 years on from European final number one, it's number six, Jonathan Johnson. I'll run through those for you and our listeners to remind you where we got to. 2002, 2003, breaking Scottish hearts, beating Celtic 3-2 with Porto in the UEFA Cup. A year later, he goes and does the magical run to the Champions League final, winning it with Porto. Probably the last great shock Champions League winners, 3-0 against Monaco. 6 years later, he's back in that final with Inter Milan, beats Bayern Munich 2-0. 2016-17, Mike Lahoud. What happened in 2016-17?
European glory. Mourinho strikes again with Manchester United, 2-0 against Ajax.
And then to become the first manager to win the treble of the Champions League, the Europa League, and the big one, the Conference League, that 1-0 victory over Feyenoord last season. JJ, when we go through those games, anything that particularly strikes you about why it might be that Mourinho has this phenomenal 100% record in European finals?
I mean, when you look at them, not that many are too high scoring. Certainly, there's a major emphasis on defense when you look at the fact that there have been four clean sheets for his team. I mean, I think we all can sort of cast our minds back to, some of those finals, some of the pivotal moments. But it seems like, in that very first final, Porto beating Celtic, Mourinho really learned that the key to all of this, the secret, was, absolutely locking down that defense. I mean, it's like you said, sort of on Roma's route, to this final, they've shown some fantastic rear guard performances, and that at the end of the day is the crux of Mourinho's success, because if your team doesn't concede, then you have a better chance of winning, as long as you can do it at the other end. Only thing that I would say is that, this Roma side seemed less prolific than some of the teams he's coached in the past. That Porto side certainly had more goals in it, Inter and United as well. You feel like if Roma are to do this against Sevilla, it's going to be more similar to the victory that they had in the Europa Conference League last season, by a goal, quite tense at times, very tight. I certainly can't see them, running out, 3-0 winners like they did against Monaco back in 2003-04. But it's not necessarily going to be one for the neutrals, but I'd be lying if we said that we were tuning in. I'd be lying if I said that we were tuning in only for the football that's going to be played on the pitch, because Mourinho himself is going to be a spectacle during this game. 90 minutes or however long the game turns out to be, it's going to be phenomenal entertainment.
I think what I see when I look at those finals, one thing that Mourinho has been able to do yes, pragmatism through the knockout stages. And a lot of those teams, maybe the FC Porto, the Inter side, excuse me, were the exception. They did have to be pragmatic against Barcelona in the second leg of that treble run with Inter. But he has the ability to unlock some of his most gifted players in finals who may have been struggling up until that point. And I think of what he did last year with Zaniolo. Zaniolo had injury problems, but he delivered in the finals because set pieces are a major factor in those finals. When you look at his teams, he has a set piece marksman and a playmaker, Pellegrini. He will be a key player as we talk about key matchups, which we'll get into shortly. He is one player I'm keeping an eye on. Obviously, what he does with Paulo Dybala. Roma have match winners in their side. They have no problem making it ugly and sitting in a low block. Sevilla, they are not a first-half team in this competition. They are very much a second-half team. So if Roma can get that early goal, it favors Mourinho and his tactics in this final.
I'd like to take you guys all back to the halcyon days of 2006. We're going to hear from Tammy Abraham very shortly. But before then, the halcyon days of 2006, Franz Ferdinand topping the charts, probably only on one side of the Atlantic. It's a battle in the Premier League between Chelsea and Manchester United for supremacy. And a young midfielder called Michael Lahoud is tearing it up. I think you just landed on the 2005 All-ACC freshman team, which I'm sure you know what that means. I don't. The glory days of college football for Mike Lahoud and the start of an unimaginable dynasty, as in Eindhoven in the Netherlands, Sevilla are crushing Middlesbrough 4-0 in the 2006. I can't remember if it was UEFA Cup or Europa League back then. Whichever it was the start of something pretty special. The next year, they Espanyol. Then you have a little bit of a break. I've got this on the Wikipedia page, so if I miss one. 2014, a win over Benfica. Dnipro, in the following year, were beaten 3-2. 3-1 over Liverpool. That was Unai Emery's treble.
Hold on. Dnipro's victory, though, was under Juan de Ramos, right? Was he not in charge of Sevilla for some of those early victories?
Fact checker.
I think Unai Emery's got the treble a bit later, maybe. Anyway,
yeah.
This is hard to keep up with. 2020, Inter Milan. I remember we were all, well, a lot of us were in the CBS Sports family back then. I mean, there are some great giant killings in there. Mike, where does beating Roma rank alongside them? And I mean, in terms of the difficulty of this game.
For Sevilla. It would be another notch in the club's belt, I think, especially because they're going up against the finals talisman in Jose Mourinho. Fabrizio Romano said it best when we had him on maybe like last week or the week before, where Sevilla have a team, but Roma have Jose Mourinho. And for Sevilla, fact check for you guys and little trivia. If Sevilla win this title, it'd be their seventh. Only five other European clubs have more major European trophies. Can you guess who those clubs are?
Real Madrid.
Real being the obvious one, I'd imagine.
Milan?
Yeah, one of the Milan teams, at least.
Okay.
Is it not in
Liverpool?
Mm-hmm.
Bayern?
Yes. One more. Come on, lads.
This isn't good radio if we don't, or good podcast if we don't fill the sound. Right. I mean, it's got
Juventus.
Do you want me to give you a hint on the country?
Give us a country, yeah.
All right, Spain.
Oh, it must be Barcelona?
Ding, 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 ding. Bank holiday refreshed for James Benched.
I wouldn't have thought that Barcelona had won that many.
You know, before we move on, I just wanted to throw something in. Now, I think I maybe overplayed it in my preview piece for this, but I basically pitched it as sort of the unstoppable force meeting the immovable object, because Jose Mourinho has never lost a continental final that he's played in, but Sevilla have never been runners-up when they've made the final of this competition. Now, obviously, Mourinho himself will win his sixth European title if he gets Roma over the line here, Sevilla aiming for that seventh. But for me, I think there's a little more on the line for Sevilla, because when you look at the league table, they're at the mercy of other results on the final day if they manage to scrape into Europe, which would be a fantastic achievement for Mendilibar, who will be coaching in his first European final. But equally, like I said before, you've got the sort of history factor that's on Mourinho's side and how he would relish sort of having the spotlight on him once again, and the fact that it's kind of put him back in vogue despite having, you know, sort of damaged his reputation. I'm not going to say beyond all repair, but very heavily stained his reputation towards the end in the Premier League with that awful spell with Tottenham. This has really sort of rehabilitated that. And for me, I find it just a fascinating matchup because somebody at the end of the day is going to have their history spoiled.
And I think it's fascinating as well that Mourinho, who we maybe would think is past his prime, past his due date as a manager, and those are the questions that followed him at United and at Tottenham. He's really connected with this Roma squad. And we're going to hear from Tammy Abraham now as well, who will say the same thing and has gone on to amazing things since making the move to link up with Mourinho in the Eternal City. So here's Tammy Abraham talking about Jose Mourinho.
He's the type of guy that, you know, knows how to really get under you. I think he will never tell you how well you're doing. You know, he will always try to push you to your max. And for me, I've always needed that. You know, I could be having the best game of my career and he'll tell me I'm still not doing enough. So I think for us, this is the kind of person we needed, you know, to really drive us and push us to the limit.
Mike, 8 goals for Tammy Abraham this season. Not quite as amazing a record as he had in his first when he was 17 in 37 Serie A games. But the chances still keep coming, and he's going to be a real threat for Sevilla, isn't he?
It's what he hasn't done in terms of getting on the score sheet, he's still doing in terms of hold-up play, in terms of defensive work, off-the-ball movement, and it's creating running lanes for midfielders to score. Look at who's leading the team and leading the line underneath Tammy Abraham. Pellegrini, as I said, Paulo Dybala when he gets in, even the likes of Bove, the youngster who scored the winner in the first leg against Bayer Leverkusen. Your midfielders thrive when you have an unselfish striker in Abraham. And that comes from Jose Mourinho. He wants commitment, getting everyone committed to the cause, and you have that in Tammy Abraham.
I was sort of elaborating on that point. I'm really looking forward to seeing how Abraham goes up against Loic Bedi. Now, Bedi was a player who kind of shot to prominence in Ligue 1 when he was with Rennes, moved from Lens to Rennes even, when he was part of that excellent Lens team that secured survival at the first time of asking coming up from Ligue 2. But it didn't quite work out for him once he made the move over to England. He's now enjoying sort of a new lease of life in Spain with Sevilla, you know, as part of this kind of motley crew that Sevilla have put together that actually turns out to not be as bad as we maybe first thought they were when we were, you know, looking at some of those players that have been assembled. Now, I think because he's a goal threat as well, you know, Bedi could have quite a significant role to play in this because his ability to kind of limit the opportunities that Tammy Abraham sees, equally as well Dybala, you know, should Dybala be deployed in you know, a sort of central attacking role in front of goal. It's, for me, I think that's going to be one of the key battles that plays out in Budapest.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think his partnership between he and Gudel is one to keep an eye on. I think Gudel is the weakest link in that back line. He's naturally a defensive midfielder, and he's been forced to play in that back line. And teams that have gotten the better and gotten goals against Sevilla, whether it's in La Liga or in the Europa League, they've attacked him. He's very aggressive, both aggressive center backs. They're not very connected, and sometimes they can get isolated. The big thing to watch out for is which midfield can impose themselves. Sevilla are not going to, they're going to be without one of their key attacking options in Acuna. He got that red card in the win over Juve in the second leg. That's going to be a big factor because they get a lot of crosses from the left-hand side, but neither midfield is very mobile, but which midfield can impose their will on their opponent, I think gives their team the best chance to win.
The other thing we have obviously, because they're such starry talent, we've obviously talked a lot about Roma's front line. I tell you, Youssef En-Nesyri in a Sevilla shirt, as Mike Lahoud, you can attest him having scored 2 goals against your beloved Manchester United and also then scoring against Juventus in the next round. He is a live wire. He tends to come alive in fits and bursts, but since the turn of 2023, he's found some really good form. Having said that, you know, the reason why, and we're going to come on to do the predictions, the reason why I just shade towards Roma is when you kind of look at the underlying metrics, best defense in terms of expected goals allowed in Serie A this season. Can they just keep En-Nesyri, keep an eye on him? He is the sort of
player that really pounces on the mistakes of opponents. And Jose Mourinho teams are quite good at not making those mistakes. That's kind of what where I'm going to be really watching out for. But time has come to nail our colours to the mast, to make our picks. Who is going to win the Europa League final to keep their 100% record in finals going? Mike Lahoud, is it AS Roma, who, by the way, only won one of their three European finals before that was Mourinho magic sprinkled over them? Is it AS Roma or is it Sevilla?
I think history is about to be made, but on the wrong side of history for Sevilla, losing their first ever Europa League final. I pick AS Roma to win, as I say, underneath my handle, Roma to win. And it's going to go down to the wire. I think it goes all the way to penalty kicks. Rui Patricio, the PK hero. I think Roma get the first goal. Sevilla get that second and goes to penalty kicks. And, you know, Mourinho magic once again.
JJ. Oh, man. Mike Lahoud and I are reading from the same script pretty much. I have gone for this one going beyond 90 minutes and Roma ending up 2-1 winners.
I feel like if I go Roma as well, that's gonna be pretty much handing the title to Sevilla, isn't it? Well, I'm going Roma. I think they're a better team. I think they've got better players. And I know that Sevilla have massively swung upwards in form over the last few months and that the Europa League is theirs by right. You've got to take it from them. But I think if anyone's going to do that, it's Roma. They're a much better football team than their standing in Serie A suggests. And I think we're going to see that, even though anything can happen in 90 minutes. Right. That is our Europa League preview, our Europa League review. Guys, remember the time Man United lost 5-2 to Sevilla on aggregate? Just wanted to remind you all of that one final time. We'll be back after the break. We're going to talk some Pochettino and Napoli.
You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Pochettino, Mauricio Pochettino is the new Chelsea manager at long last. That was announced yesterday, bank holiday Monday here in the UK. Good time to sneak out some bad news. Is it bad news for Chelsea, Jonathan Johnson? Or is it bad news for Mauricio Pochettino? Or is it good news for everyone?
I'm not going to say necessarily it's good news for everyone. It's a great appointment for Chelsea, especially considering that they're out of European competition. It's a risky move from Pochettino, given that his legacy now depends upon how he does at Stamford Bridge. Let's face it, his time with PSG was not a success. He won't be judged solely on that because of the high stock that he enjoys from his time in charge of Tottenham Hotspur, but he has forever destroyed that goodwill from the Spurs fans by taking the job for Chelsea, I think. And it is a risk because at the end of the day, I know that there's changes afoot at Chelsea. You know, Bowley's going to be taking a step back and, you know, sort of the more football specific minds are going to be sort of taking over, you know, day-to-day control of the club. But, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. Obviously, no European football next season. That is probably actually a good thing. You know, for Pochettino in terms of sort of, you know, getting down to, you know, taking the squad back to basics, you know, because it is a hugely bloated squad. And to be honest, you know, when you bear in mind that they've got Nkunku coming in, you know, we know that they're pushing hard for Ugarte at the moment in midfield. You don't actually think, or you can't see that there's actually too much need for many other, you know, additions to this squad, at least not before you get rid of some players. I think this Chelsea squad is in need of trimming before it is sort of, you know, adding more star name and talent to it. I certainly think they could do with more teeth in attack. We know that Joao Felix won't be staying at Stamford Bridge now, but I feel like Pochettino has a bigger job on his hands in terms of rooting through this group of players and working out who he wants to work with, who he doesn't, than he does in terms of working out, you know, how many more additional dressing rooms need to be built for extra signings.
It's so funny because Stamford Bridge is like one of the most cramped grounds in England. So in COVID times, they had to shrink the press room to make way for the bigger dressing rooms.
Oh, that would have been disastrous for the buffet though.
Oh God, it's an absolute disgrace. But you just think, God, if they actually tried to fit all their squad in the dressing room next season, there would be no press room. We'd just have to huddle outside. Some great comments coming in from our excellent listeners and viewers. Ed, 2-year deal shows how Chelsea have been badly burned by the Potter debacle. Very true, and a very good point made by Ed. As Chelsea have been handing out these lifetime contracts, it seems, to some of their expensive young footballers, just 2 years for Mauricio Pochettino, does reflect a little bit of caution, and one wonders how much they are a little bit nervous about the years to come. Vic says it's good news. Pochettino needs this challenge to become an elite coach. You are right, Vic, because I tell you, if he makes it through this challenge, no one could dispute his status as an elite coach. I think this is one of the toughest jobs there is in world football. He can't change the expectations of Chelsea fans. He can't make them embrace a rebuild, but a rebuild is exactly what's needed, because the one thing I take issue with on what JJ was saying is, I look at this squad and think it needs an awful lot of work. You know, new recruits. This is a team that hasn't had a good talismanic striker since Diego Costa went AWOL under Antonio Conte. Neither of those goalkeepers, to me, are anywhere near the standard of a top four goalkeeper, no matter how much has been spent on them. I'd like to see them get better. You know, if I'm a Chelsea supporter, if I'm on the Chelsea board, I'd like to see them get a better defensive partner for Thiago Silva and the player to eventually replace Thiago Silva. JJ mentioned Ugarte. That's a reminder that that midfield needs a bit of youth. Mason Mount, he's going to need replacing. And then you're getting rid of an awful lot of players. I mean, the one I would point out is just look at that logjam on the left flank. Let's assume Pulisic goes. Let's assume Aubameyang goes. You still have Mikhailo Mudryk. You still have Callum Hudson-Odoi. You still have Raheem Sterling. You still have maybe Kai Havertz. Oh, and you're getting Christoph Nkunku. Our producer Des has said in our question there, can Poch get them back into the top four? Can Poch get them back in the top half, Mike Lahoud?
I think in the top half. I think it's going to be very dependent on if they get a striker and if they can get rid of Kai Havertz. This is a player that, a couple of years ago, scored the game-winning goal under Thomas Tuchel in the Champions League final, but has been on borrowed time. I think if they trim the fat on some of these players that you've named, their biggest transfer policy to be getting a number nine. In the Premier League, if you do not have a number nine that gets you goals in tough games against the top six or seven teams, you will not be able to compete. Look at some of the teams that are in that position. They found ways to compete and stay competitive, but you have to score goals. You can't draw your way to a top four or top five finish in the Premier League.
And just to say on that regard, I believe Chelsea went this season without any player making double figures in goals. The first time that's happened in, I think, over 40 years. And considering the number of games they were playing, including Champions League, that is an impressive achievement. Right, one final bit of managerial coming, in this case going, to discuss. Luciano Spalletti has left Napoli just to take a little break. I believe Gary Neville might refer to as a maxi retirement. He does love his mini retirements, doesn't he? Which seem to involve the weekend. Mike, you know, I mean, you've kind of gone through not a managerial career, but a playing career. You must have surely on occasions have wanted to take some time out just to reflect and enjoy things. Is it surprising that more people don't follow Spalletti's approach and Pep Guardiola's approach and just give themselves time to think and enjoy life?
I think so. When you look at what Spalletti has done, miracle season for Napoli, historical season for them, I think that there's a strategic move in this because you're going to get jobs galore coming your way. And I just wonder if it's time to take a breather before he decides what he's going to do next. When you have a job like you did with Napoli, there's going to be so much pressure to do it again, to defend the title. Can you take that extra step in the Champions League? And this squad is going to get picked apart left and right this summer. If not this summer, then the following summer. I think Spalletti is wise. I think more managers should do this because it helps you give a refreshed perspective on what your next goal and challenge is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think as well, Spalletti was quite honest about it. You know, I think it reflects exactly how much effort it's taken to get this third Scudetto over the line for Napoli. It's been a very labor-intensive couple of years for him in Naples, and that drains you massively. And realistically, you know, we were talking earlier about sort of Italian clubs' chances of going far in Europe again next season. Can we see Napoli sort of making it through this summer without some of the star names, perhaps at least being, you know, tempted away by or having their heads turned by some offers from bigger clubs?
United.
It's difficult. And, you know, for me to imagine Napoli sort of having as good a chance next season as they did, this one just ending to go and make it all the way to a Champions League final, I struggle to see it. So I think I can understand where Spalletti's coming from, because realistically, sort of now you're entering this phase with Napoli as Italian champions. You almost need somebody who can potentially come in and maybe lead that next sort of at least sort of 2 to 4 year period, where you try and sustain, being Italian champions, try to become that dominant force like Juve have been before, like Inter have been, like Milan as well. And it's going to be really difficult. And I don't think, it's necessarily anything to take away from Spalletti about if he feels like he's not going to be able to invest sort of, you know, what's necessary in terms of, physically, emotionally, mentally. So, I think he's making the right decision. He leaves on a high because I'm not convinced it's going to be the easiest act to follow.
Rafa Cardenas in the comments, Napoli won't repeat this season. Spalletti knew it. Wise decision to leave on a high. Good luck to whoever takes over. And in terms of the managers being linked with taking over, Thiago Motta, who JJ, as you well know, has done great things since retiring. Luis Enrique, he sounds like he's the front runner. And we're hearing about Antonio Conte being linked as well now. If ever there's a manager who has given the impression he could just really do with a little bit of a break, not taking things quite so seriously, enjoy some Prosecco, Antonio. That's what I would say. Don't be diving feet first into trying to follow Luciano Spalletti. I'm fascinated as to where, and this might be maybe the question we leave it on. I'm fascinated as to where Spalletti might land next. He's had one spell outside Italy with Zenit St. Petersburg, five pretty successful years when Zenit were one of the richest clubs in all Europe. Beyond that, he's achieved great things at Roma, even if that didn't always convert to titles. His team with the false nine of Francesco Totti was one of the most intriguing in their era in Italy and in Europe. And now he's the same with this Napoli team that we've all fallen in love with here on House of Champions and beyond. JJ, first, and then Mike, what should Spalletti, where would you like to see Spalletti land next, and which Premier League club exactly is it?
I mean, I am curious to see where Spalletti goes next, because he's almost done the tour of the big Italian clubs possible for him to go to. So you do wonder if maybe there is another sort of unexpected destination that could come for him next. I do believe that he intends to take a year out based on the comments he gave on Monday, which is quite interesting. I think as well, De Laurentiis has hinted that despite the fact that discussions took place with Luis Enrique, it sounds like Enrique would prefer a Premier League move. Also, one other thing to add on that, the last time Conte followed Spalletti, he did end Inter's wait for a Serie A title. So maybe there is a little bit of logic to Conte following in Spalletti's footsteps, because it's something that they've done before. But in terms of Spalletti, I don't think that he'll be rushed. I don't think he'll be short of suitors. I think there'll be a number of clubs who really fancy him. But as much as I would love to imagine him in the Premier League, I'm not sure I could see it. I think he might be tempted to go somewhere a bit further afield. I wouldn't necessarily say that he's one of the big names that would be tempted by Saudi Arabia, despite the fact I'm sure that there would be some very lucrative offers proposed to him. It's a curious one. I mean, Russia, obviously that option is completely off the table, these days, and there's no sort of equivalent, posting to that. But then again, you look at what De Zerbi has managed to do, sort of treading a similar kind of Eastern Europe and then, coming to the Premier League route. Maybe that is something that Spalletti would look at and consider.
When I look at Spalletti, and we've talked about the circuit that he's done in Italy, there's two clubs that remain, and there's two clubs to keep an eye on. AC Milan, young team. Pioli's done amazing with them. Pressure on Pioli now to get that team back to the Scudetto title and get that team over the hump in the Champions League. And I just wonder, should something happen with Pioli, if Spalletti, the timing of it, if his phone doesn't ring off, and the melee that is Juventus, there will be major overhaul in Turin over the next year or two. I wonder, once the tides settle, if that's a club that he doesn't get poached by. So those are my two teams to keep an eye on.
I've got two fun ones, one of which I am stealing from Rafa Cardenas, although I will insist I'd thought of it before. But first of all, club level. Let's assume he does take the full year out and enjoys it. I mean, I don't think Barcelona at the moment would be in any rush to get rid of Xavi, but I would love to see Spalletti with something like the Barcelona team we expect to have in the coming years. I think he could play really interesting football that fits the Barcelona model. But the other one, and kudos Rafa, I thought this was the obvious answer, or the correct answer as well. Come 2024, Roberto Mancini will may well have feel like his time at the Azzurri is up. I would love to see Luciano Spalletti take the helm there. That would be fantastic. We wish him the best, and we wish all of you the best, and we're very grateful to you all for joining us here on House of Champions. Europa League final coming up tomorrow night. I can hardly wait. Thank you so much for listening, and please do take a minute to leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere you listen to your podcast, we're there. We're also available on video on YouTube. Do please subscribe to us there. Mike Lahoud, Jonathan Johnson, thanks so much for joining me. And we will be back later in the week to talk all things transfers, Europa League final, Champions League final. There's so much to talk about on House of Champions. We'll see you very soon. Bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.